This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 380. Spoiler alert! Some of you won't complete this episode. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best,
the fucking best,
girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey!
How you doing?
I'm better.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, not so much better as much as you're back.
Back and better.
No, I don't know about that. Well, I'll reserve judgment.
Back and healthier.
No, because you still have that cough.
Back and not dead.
Hi, well, that's accurate.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm back. Yep. Guess who's back and black?
No.
Guess who's back?
No.
And she's black and she's back. Shut up.
I'm just saying.
I'm black enough.
Suspect. No, I'm not going to throw shade like that. I know you're black
ish. That's very true.
Oh.
That's very accurate.
But we are back with a brand new episode of the weekly podcast.
Hi!
And what is phenomenal about being back with the weekly podcast is that we get to kick it off with the question of the week.
Yes, we do.
Reserved from previous weeks.
Well, two, because we had a clip show last week and then
we had a show.
Yeah.
So, remind the people what the question of the week was.
The question of the week from 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Was Darkwing Duck or DuckTales. Ooh. It was a Battle of the Ducks. Battle of the Ducks! And the Mighty Ducks were not a part of this.
No. Because if you're going to bring the Mighty Ducks into anything, really the only thing that the Mighty Ducks can battle against are other Mighty Duck movies.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the only fair thing to do.
By the way, it would have totally been D3. But that's beside the Mighty Ducks 3 when they go against the Swedes in the World Cup.
Thing. I don't think
the
so.
The Flying V. Anyway, that is neither here or there.
Yeah, well, it's here and there, but that's another question for another podcast.
So we have a response to that.
What?
Yes, so for the three times that I actually put it out there.
I'm surprised that we only got one response, because I thought this would definitely be much more polarizing.
Yes. Well, I mean, I put it out there four times in the span of 2 weeks.
That's not enough. Four times in 2 weeks, dude.
But that's okay. But we did, hey, I'm glad that out of that we still got one. So, Danny the Me, big ups, girl. Was like, Esh question, DuckTales or Darkwing Duck? Definitely DuckTales. Hands down, DuckTales. So, thank you for that. I am actually going to not say DuckTales as
my answer. You're picking Darkwing Duck over DuckTales.
I am, and here is the reason.
I really need to understand this because I was so sure you were going to be
Well, because I have a lot of love for DuckTales. I played that effing game up and down, bought the remastered, play the remastered up and down like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, I wouldn't believe, but go ahead.
But when you look at story, character development, growth, there's a lot more that goes on in Darkwing Duck than it does in DuckTales. Because you're dealing more with Drake, you know, the Mallard, being a single dad, raising a daughter, you know, having to deal with Launchpad, and then having this alter ego where he fights crime. And they really don't, there's a couple of episodes that really hone in on him when he's just trying to be normal. You know, so, and they expand on everyone to such a great degree, even the villains, you know, like Megawatt, or the water dog guy, whose name I can't remember anymore, but I feel or felt that there was a lot more. And not to mention Darkwing Duck was like the super, super animated version of Batman. I felt they were. It was more slapsticky, but the type of characters, the type of villains he had, like, you know, having a character that looked pretty much like him, Megawatt.
Darkwing Duck's whole thing was that he was supposed to be Batman, but not as good.
Well, he's not. And he fails all the time. Okay. And he deals with the fact and that, you know, he fails at a lot of things, and it doesn't stop him from...
Like, in my mind, it was if Batman and Inspector Gadget were thrown together.
Oh, God. Sort of.
In a character. Because sort you had of. A sidekick that really was the force in solving a lot of the crimes.
So, wait, which because Launchpad didn't solve the crimes for Darkwing.
No, Launchpad didn't solve the crimes, but Darkwing's kid sometimes...
Goslin yeah. would pick up on something, or her nerdy chicken friend.
Correct. So would she was much like Penny
from Inspector Gadget.
Okay.
Yes.
And then
okay.
you had Launchpad, but was more Penny, like
Penny
the dog.
Really solved that crime. Penny was really the real mastermind there.
In you know, Inspector and Gadget. And so you know, I'm not to steal your thunder. I picked DuckTales over Darkwing Duck, and I think it's just because one, I was a little bit older when Darkwing Duck hit, and so for me, the sheer fun of DuckTales is the reason why
I love it. And I'm not saying that DuckTales isn't fun.
No, but for me, Darkwing Duck was always a little more serious.
Right.
It was a little more dark.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, you know, just as fun and adventurous.
I mean, I just feel like you felt more consequences for characters and
I'm
the
not
decisions.
Looking for consequences of characters in my cartoons.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're going to present a cartoon that does those things, then you want one that does it well. And I mean, okay, hey, I'm Scrooge McDuck. I own this giant money pit of money that I just swim in because I'm a duck and ducks swim. And I'm just going to go on adventures to become even more rich. And I'm going to be really Scroogey about my money to everyone, even my three nephews that I have now kind of technically adopted.
But you gotta understand that Scrooge was less Scrooge McDuck, less Scroogey of a duck in DuckTales than Scrooge was actually designed to be.
Yes.
And it's because he was Lungold. Taking care of Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Right.
That
I'm
happened.
Not saying they didn't give him a backstory and try to give him some growth.
No, but you had some serious growth of character, because the way that the character was originally created by Disney is not what he ended up being in DuckTales. So you had a big change in Scrooge McDuck, because Scrooge wasn't the type of duck to want to have anyone around. And then he went from that happening to having Mrs. Beakley and
Webbigale
and the three boys, and then Launchpad, and then, what's
the
his name?
The duck who was Roboduck?
Yeah, Gizmo Duck.
And that, yeah.
Gizmo's
a chicken.
That's right, Gizmo.
Gizmo was a scientific chicken who I thought was a duck, but isn't. Right.
And the scientist that...
Gizmo made the robo suit.
Yeah.
And whoever wore the robo suit, who... I can't remember what his name was. And I know it wasn't Donald, because he could speak.
You know, so you had...
Correctly.
All of those characters that now, you know, created a whole universe around Scrooge McDuck. The universe wasn't just about the pursuit of money. It was about the adventure, ultimately, of the whole family. Because it wasn't ever just Scrooge that was in a situation.
Nope. The boys would get in some type
the
of trouble that would lead to some type of treasure.
Webby would get in trouble with Launchpad's the Eagle Boys.
Launchpad's plane would crash somewhere.
And so you had this real big universe that was built around this character that had this very, very small universe to start with. And it was all about adventure and high fun, and there were some lessons about family that you build versus the family that you have, which I thought was cute and cool, and it just was a little bit more fun to me than Darkwing. Now, don't get me wrong, I freaking love Darkwing Duck. The jokes that run throughout that series are definitely much more highbrow than the running gags and lines that are in DuckTales. But for me, if you're going to go nostalgia and you're going to say DuckTales or Darkwing Duck, I'm going to go with what's the one that makes me smile more, and the one that makes me smile more is DuckTales.
But they do both have very catchy opening songs.
Oh, they're fantastic. You know, Disney was cranking out amazing cartoons.
The Disney afternoon was probably my best spent hours in my teenage, preteen, teenage childhood.
Dude, I was finally able to get you interested in the Canterbury Tales after watching Gargoyles.
I know. I was all like, wait a minute.
Which basically eventually just became like Star Trek The Next Generation literally side project.
It was like, okay, if you're not filming for TNG, then you need to go do your voice work over at Gargoyles.
Gargoyles. I mean, because you had Sirius.
Oh, yeah, and brush up on Canterbury Tales because we're going to Avalon. Spinner.
I think Stewart did a voice at one point. Gates McFadden did a voice. I was like, Jesus Christ, is there anyone who didn't do a voice? And I can't remember. I think LeVar Burton was the only one.
Only
who
one. He had ended he was up like, doing nope.
A voice. I think he and the Scottish engineer there.
Yeah.
Were the only ones who
were like, nope.
Ended up not doing any voice work for Gargoyles.
And you know, and people don't give Gargoyles enough credit.
Seriously.
That's a totally different beast.
And we will have the Gargoyles podcast.
We will have that discussion.
So thank you so much for answering the question of the week. We got another one coming up at the end of the show. But for now, it's time for us to actually segue into what it is that we do here on this podcast, which is talk about video games and anime. And up first, video games. And specifically, I'm going to take the mic. And you want to know why?
Because you're the older sister?
Sure, I mean, that could be a reason. It's not my reason, but if what, it
what's
makes
your
you
reason,
feel better.
Then?
Because I just said so. I like I said so much better as a reason than
okay,
because
fine.
I'm older.
Okay, fine, then take the mic and share with our friends what you want to share.
So, GDC happened. GDC is awesome.
GDC!
Hopefully next year, we'll get to go. A couple of interesting things that came out of that. I'm not clamoring for VR. You probably have noticed that we have never talked about the Oculus Rift on our podcast.
Well, that's not true. I talked a little bit about...
But I'm talking like hands-on and what we're looking forward to and why...
Right.
Or why not. Like, we haven't gotten into that.
Wasn't there some news about it?
Well, there's definitely news about Oculus. One, Facebook bought Oculus VR.
Holy shit.
Really? Yeah.
Wait, so now I get to...
As a person who lives on Facebook, how did you not hear about this?
So wait, now I get to go and buy an Oculus Rift so that I can physically, in virtual reality, hit the I like button?
No. Maybe.
Now I can go into VR and go to people's pictures and, like, honka-honka their
so
boobies?
Facebook has said that Oculus, right now, the plans for it, is to remain in the game space.
So they're going to make Facebook games where you have to use VR?
No, not necessarily. I think that this is...
It's time to duel!
No.
Holy shit. A Yu-Gi-Oh! In VR? Hell no.
Stop it. Stop it.
Heart Panda. Pass to the left.
Panda, stop. See? You're choking yourself up.
The idea of that is giving me diabetes.
So it's so sweet? You got the sugar?
It's so oily... And bad for me that it's clogging my arteries.
Okay, that doesn't necessarily lead to diabetes. Anyway.
Diabetes! That leads to a heart attack.
This is basically Facebook trying to expand a little bit and get into the game market.
Oh, because it's not big enough already?
Well, you gotta remember that Facebook, the way that it stands right now, has competitors on a couple of different sides that don't just do web or social networking stuff. Okay, Facebook has gone head-to-head before with a couple of different companies. One of the ones that they're, you know, have on their radar is obviously Samsung. The other one that they have on their radar is Google. And Google is getting more into the game space.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because of the Android tablet and their marketplace. So, you know, Facebook, with a bunch of cash on hand, decided that they wanted to expand a little bit. You know, things went well with their purchase of Instagram a while ago and the way that that was eventually worked into Facebook, but still remains its own standalone thing right now. Worked pretty well with them. So my big thing with this is just kind of understanding what's happening and what's not happening. Facebook buying Oculus does not mean that in 3 months there's going to be virtual reality Facebook where necessarily...
You want to play that ninja love game and get a little too close to those 2D girls? Not happening!
Yet.
Yet.
Okay. But gaming is one of the big things, and gamification is one of the big things that's available on the social network. And, you know, in order to court more people to create games for the platform, you have to do something to innovate that. So it makes sense to me that Facebook would look for a way to do that. And Oculus is kind of low-lying fruit to grab a hold of, as far as not something that's proprietary to an existing platform. You know, Facebook is not going to get in bed with Microsoft.
Oh, man.
They're not going to get in bed with Sony. They want to do their own thing. Ooh, is not an option because, you know,
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, no.
So it kind of makes sense. Now, that doesn't mean that down the path in the future, because Facebook is looking at ways to advance their messaging feature. You know, they have a standalone application.
Yep, I don't use it
for anything. iPhone for messaging. Nope. You know, they bought WhatsApp, and part of speculation.
What's that?
It's a SMS and voice communication application for mobile devices. So basically it's like Skype but without the video piece.
So
it would allow you to make voice calls through your mobile device Facebook, so they wouldn't ding your minutes. They wouldn't count against your existing phone plan. Facebook would be the connected mechanism. So basically it would allow Facebook Messenger to become more of a Skype competitor. Then not. Then you throw Oculus on the back end of that. And I think that there would be some people who would be interested in having a messaging app on their mobile device that taps into their existing friend network on Facebook and would allow them to do a virtual reality call. Could be interesting. So it could be something that they're working forward. But that Oculus sale isn't the biggest necessarily thing in VR, although they did buy them for a ridiculous amount of money.
Wasn't it like $2 billion? Yeah.
The other piece of the VR news is that Sony announced at GDC their VR headset for the PlayStation 4. Now, guys and gals
and people,
friends and family of the Eshcast, where is all this desire for virtual reality and gaming coming from? Because I just don't get it. Like, we just finally put
3D TV to bed
as a do not want. Do we really want VR?
Well, I mean, if VR came in the form of a holodeck, wouldn't you be all bored for that? Wait.
Holodeck is different than VR. VR is I got to put a headset on that's going to create for me the illusion of virtual reality. It's going to, between the sound that's pumping into my ears and basically visual trickery and my field of vision, create a surrounded feel for me of an experience.
Okay.
It's not actually going to be a holographic representation of something that actually exists in third dimensions. Okay, a holodeck is tangible. VR is not tangible. I'm not going to be able to reach inside the headset and touch any of the things that I see.
Yeah, reach inside and touch it.
But seriously, like, they're two separate, completely different things. If somebody wants to create and is working on and wants to roll out a holodeck, I'm fucking there.
Here's my money. Take this money.
Because when the experience is now me attempting to be Lara Croft in a Tomb Raider game, as opposed to using a controller to manipulate pixels. See, we're talking a completely different ballgame. That's innovation. That's the next wave, new frontier. I want to talk about that. VR is just really augmenting existing stuff that we have.
Okay. All right. I understand what you're getting at.
From this is just my opinion, people. But VR just augments what we already have. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, as a community, are we clamoring for this? Because I'm not, and my little group of gamers, it's not on our radar.
I mean, I just checked my panties. I'm not wet. So, I could leave it.
Welcome back, Pandalicious.
You're welcome. I knew you guys missed me.
Wow.
I'm just saying, I'm not clamoring for it. Obviously. I get it? Wow. Clamoring?
Ooh, stop. Bum, bum. Stop.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bum.
1 week off, and this is what happened. But I'm just asking. I'm putting it out there because I'm curious. Because it's not for me. You know, I think that Oculus is interesting, but to take a page from Panda's book, panties not getting soggy.
The announcement. I do not need a towel.
The announcement from Sony on the PlayStation 4 front of working on a VR helmet. Also, not making me wet in the pants area. So I'm curious to know what you guys are thinking, because it's not one that's really, like, lit a fire under me. It was kind of like, meh, okay, that's what you got. You know, maybe because I'm not a game developer, it isn't as exciting for me, but maybe as a developer, it's more interesting as far as...
If you're a developer, tell us if you're interested and why. We'd love to understand
I'd love to know, because I'm just like, here's another fucking thing that I'm going to have to deal with for the next year and a half until it dies because nobody wants it.
Until somebody voices their opinions like Ninja does.
I voice my opinions all the time. Nobody listens to me, but...
True.
Thanks, sis.
I love you. Hey, telling the truth. I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah, let's douchey 2014.
I'm telling you the truth.
Fail sauce.
No, it's so, not. I still respect you, and I respect that you have an opinion. But
you accept that I have an opinion.
Even if I had the money, just like you, I wouldn't buy into VR.
Yeah.
They nearly got me into VR Troopers in the 80s. Barely. Barely.
No, I had a friend that had a Virtual Boy, which was the red VR unit for that Nintendo came out with.
No, I mean that horrible 80s show, VR Troopers, with the three kids.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, there were three kids.
Okay.
And a chick.
I believe you.
Sure. And they could plug into their computer.
Oh, wait, was this like a kids show thing?
Yeah, and
like
they fought viruses in a computer.
Right, right. They were up against
VR Troopers.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers or something like that.
They competed with Power Rangers till Power Rangers kicked them in their balls.
Well, Power Rangers.
Power Rangers forever.
Okay. So let us know. Hit us up. Facebook, Twitter. You know the channels that we're on. Share your opinions. We're really interested in them. We'll share them as we go throughout the year and things start to roll. I got issues on that one. So
I feel like you should talk to our friend, the issues guy.
I might have to go on the issues program just so I can talk about my issues with VR because, you know, I need more soapboxes to stand on. Don't say anything, Panda. All right, moving on. I felt that douchey comment coming.
Oh, it bubbled in my tummy, and I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. You're trying to be more of an honest, awesome person.
The other thing that I did this past week was play BioShock Infinite Burial at Sea.
Now, you've already played the first part of Burial at Sea, right?
It's the second piece. I had not played the first one. I downloaded the first one. I think I played about 5 minutes into it. Then a game explosion happens.
Explosion of games!
And DLC. So between DLC for Saints Row, Grand Theft Auto actually coming out, Call of Duty.
Duty.
Titanfall. And like four other games. Oh yeah, Assassins.
Oh yeah.
So. Wolf Among Us. Yeah, I kind of got called in some other gaming directions. But I knew that Burial at Sea Episode 2 was going to drop in March.
The one everyone really wanted to play.
And when 2 came out, I said, okay, I'm going to go back and I'm going to play them both together from beginning to end so I can just do the whole Burial at Sea at one fell
swoop.
So, first thing I have to say is that Burial at Sea is huge. They actually broke it up into 2 downloads.
It's so big.
Burial at Sea Episode 2, let me be specific, broke it into 2 downloads. Because the first one was
so they're totally doing a Harry Potter thing with the last
episode. Well, they had to because the first chunk, the first section download was like 1.8 gigs and the second one was 1.6. So it's a hefty piece of DLC. But when you see as much of the world that is explorable and the detail that went into it, it kind of makes sense. So it is beefy DLC.
Beefy! Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Now, Burial at Sea is downloadable content for BioShock Infinite. So if you haven't played Infinite and you plan to,
Do not listen to this show.
Don't listen to the show.
Go fucking play it.
Just stop. Just stop right now. Pick up next week's episode. Don't listen to this one.
Stop!
Until...
Drop! Head yourself to a GameStop! Oh, no. I don't even know how to finish that, actually. Damn.
That was sucks, because that was really good.
I know.
Oh.
DMX would be proud.
DMX would not be proud. You didn't finish the verse strong.
Oh.
Anyway.
Part of my Rough Rider crew.
You are not a Rough Rider. You need to just stop.
I'm a safety first.
You're not. So anyway, if you have played Bioshock Infinite, but you haven't played Burial at Sea 1, don't listen to this podcast.
You might want to stop. Maybe you might want to wait until we're because at the 40-minute mark where I'll speak.
Unapologetically about to spoil the entire.
She's got her bread toasted, her knife ready, and her spoil jam just ready to smear all over that biscuit.
I've just popped the lid off the spoiler jam. It's about to get all juicy up in this bitch.
Oh, that sounded so bad.
So, Burial at Sea, 2 pieces. I highly recommend that you play them in succession all the way through. 1 and 2. In one sitting, if you can do it. It's completely worth it.
So get on the comfiest part of your couch. Curl up in your...
Block yourself off, you know,
wear your forever lazy. Get a catheter put in. You're not going to want to shit.
I'm going to say, if you're the type that likes to be close to completionist and not necessarily 100% completionist, pieces 1 and 2 together will probably run you about 3.5, maybe 4 hours.
But if you're like me, it's going to take you like 6.
So it's like a Saturday afternoon.
People have Saturday afternoons.
Yeah. Get some lunch, you know.
Get a whole pizza. Have your mom make you some meatloaf.
Get some chips and dips.
Mom!
No, not that stereotype. Get your own meatloaf. But...
Or get some Russell Stouffer's.
Oh,
Stouffer's. Hungry man, meal for
nothing
one.
Nothing is closer to home. All right, anyway. So, Phoebe Snow. Anyway, about 3.5, 4 hours. I would say that it probably took me... probably about 3.5 hours to run through it all together. And I was not a completionist, and I was running it actually on medium, which I typically don't do, but I love Infinite so much. So I was like, fuck it, I can do this on medium, not a problem. And it's true. So the story of Burial at Sea takes place, very interestingly, it starts with Booker DeWitt. If you played Bioshock Infinite...
I did.
And you finished Infinite...
I did.
You know that Booker DeWitt is actually...
Comstock.
Comstock.
Mm.
So it's interesting that you start the game as Booker DeWitt. Also, if you finish the game, you know that part of your finishing the game had you run through Rapture for a little bit.
Yep.
And everyone was like, what the fuck? Hey, what's going on? The worlds are kind of connected. Why?
No, really? Why? Time is spherical? How? Get the fuck out.
Why? I don't understand. I want to understand. And then all the conspiracy theories started, and everybody started running off with different ideas of why, and like people start bringing up how in the original Bioshock game that there's a point where when you're in Fontaine's, it's possible that you actually hear Songbird drowning, because Songbird
spoiler,
dies.
He dies.
Yeah, in
it dies.
And everyone's like, I think that noise that you hear when you're in a Fontaine's is actually Soundbird. And if it is, then everything is spherical. And, oh my God, Ken Levine is genius because he's been playing this forever and a day. And we didn't even know.
Oh my God, the Lutesses are not actually brother and sister. They're actually the same person.
All right. But moving right along.
That is neither here or there.
Okay. So, Burial at Sea starts with Booker DeWitt and... Booker is in Rapture.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Civil War, basically the big kerfutz-futz.
The big kerfutz.
Rapture apart.
The futz-kvitz.
Is about to happen.
Shit's about to go down.
And Elizabeth, who is also in Rapture, who was the key to...
the key to everything?
Everything from Infinite, asks him to look into the disappearance of this girl named Sally. In Rapture. Okay. Elizabeth tells Booker that she's alive. And that, what's his name? Sandra Cohen, who's an artist, might have info on where she is. So they go to his club, and Cohen is really wackadoo out there, like...
Wackadoody!
Definitely functioning on a different wavelength. And he is, when you meet him, fixated on capturing lovers in, like, the motions of dancing. But every time, and there are these muses, these two people that he has dancing, and he keeps finding fault in what they're doing and kills them.
Oh.
So, he, seeing Booker and Elizabeth, says, yeah, sure, I'll give you the information I know, but you've got to get up on stage and be my lovers dancing. And hopefully, if I don't find fault with your dance, I'll give you your information. But if I do, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Oh, but he doesn't know that Booker DeWitt and Elizabeth are my daddy and daughter.
No, and Booker at this point doesn't know that Elizabeth is his daughter.
Right, because time stuff.
Exactly, paradoxes. Cohen doesn't like their dance, knocks him unconscious. Booker wakes up, they are in a ballosphere going to the bottom of the ocean.
Of course.
Okay. Ryan has just sunk Fontaine's.
Okay.
Okay. And it's basically the prison where Atlas is. Sound familiar,
everybody? Yes, it does.
Okay. Ryan has no idea that Atlas is Fontaine.
Okay.
And shit just goes really weird from there. Sally is in a ventilation system. They're trying to get her out. In order to get her out, Elizabeth comes up with this harebrained scheme to close all the ventilation shafts and then crank up the heat so that she'll pop out of the exhaust vent.
Oh, because, you know, that's not going to hurt somebody.
No, not at all.
That's not going to fry somebody's skin.
So, as you're getting through the game, and you get to the point where you're, like, closing all these vents, and you still have the sky beam system, so you're able to use your sky hook to
cling
in areas where there are boards. Cling and aerial descent, all the mechanics from Infinite are there. You still have the ability to use Vigors. And weapon ammo is still a little scarce. But you're still Booker fucking DeWitt, and Elizabeth still chucks you ammo as you need it, and vigors as you need them, and all that kind of stuff. So that's still working. You're taking out splicers as you go along to try and get to the valve once you close all of the ports to turn up the heat. And Booker really doesn't want to do it. But Elizabeth's like, there's no other way. You have to do it. And so he's like, all right, fine. And so he goes to do it, and he has this flashback. And he's like, I can't. You do it. So Elizabeth cranks up the heat, and then all of a sudden you hear, like, a little girl screaming and shrieking. And Booker's like, we've got to run. We've got to get to her. We've got to get her out. And so he's, like, mad dashing to try and make this happen.
Right.
He gets to the vent exit. And sees, and you have to hit a button to look down the vent, sees Sally, tries to pull her out, and she's all little sistered, like, glossy-eyed and all that kind of stuff, and doesn't want to come out. As he's
reaching,
trying
to pull her out?
Yeah, and she refuses to come out.
Duh.
Sally calls her big daddy, because she's become a little sister, who then starts to take it to Booker and Elizabeth. Once you defeat the Big Daddy, mm-hmm. you go back to try and get Sally. And so you bring her little doll head and put it on the edge, and it starts to jog her memory a little bit. And she starts to come towards him.
Mm-hmm.
Booker has a flash of a memory of trying to recover his daughter in another universe. In the flashback, that Booker was baptized, became Comstock, and in this attempt to take Anna from Booker,
right,
Anna actually dies.
Oh, no.
She's decapitated. So instead of losing her pinky through the tear, she loses her head.
So, do they show that?
And you actually see in this universe, Elizabeth is there on the side with the Comstock that's trying to take the child and trying to get him to let her go.
So he's trapped.
But
so
that's where the baby to stop her being stolen. Unfortunately, the interference is what kind of causes the tear. And you actually start to see that the baby turns and the tear is closing around the neck and the head is still on the Comstock side. Thankfully enough, you don't have to watch the decapitation. But we all remember what happened to Elizabeth's pinky and how we had to watch that. Yeah, so with the baby's head.
Oh, so wait, the head was on the Comstock side.
Yes.
So Comstock got to see the head decapitation.
Well, both got, because the tear closed.
Right.
So Booker on the one side
has a headless body and Comstock has a head.
Correct. And so it's very interesting in that Sally, who's running around Rapture,
is carrying a doll with no head.
Correct. Interesting. It comes into play later on as well. So, because of that happening, Comstock flees his reality before completing Columbia.
Okay.
And he does this by having the Lutesses send his ass to Rapture.
Rapture.
Which is basically a reality where Anna never existed.
Okay.
And then get rid of all of his memories as being Booker. All right. While he's there, his memories and his old Booker memories start coming together. Uh-huh. And he starts realizing who Elizabeth actually is.
Okay.
And he tries to apologize to Elizabeth. But Elizabeth gives, like, zero fucks.
She's all about, no. No. No.
And lets him know, you're not sorry, but you're about to be. Makes a motion, and all you hear is a big daddy drill, and you see it come through the middle of Comstock Booker, and he's dead.
But wait,
that's the end of episode one.
But she's, so up until that point, Elizabeth is working with Booker / Comstock.
Correct. So basically, the whole mission to get Sally is
her way of leading Comstock to his demise. Death.
Exactly. She needed to lead him deep into Rapture, where he could be killed by a big daddy as opposed to killed up in Rapture the way it is right at that point, because it's not in Civil War yet. Splicers don't exist in the above realm of Rapture. It's still a functioning city and people are going and dancing. So she has to get him to delve into the bowels of the city. And the way that she does it is to send him on this, to hire him to go on this mission to find this girl.
Got it.
All right, so episode two starts with Elizabeth having a vision of Paris. So episode one, you're Booker, Elizabeth's your support, you're going through Rapture, shit's all good until, you know, it turns out you're actually Comstock and you die. All right, fine. Episode two starts with Elizabeth off in Paris, which when you played original Infinite, you know,
that's where she wanted to go.
That's where she wanted to go. She wanted to get out of fucking Columbia and she wanted to just go to Paris.
You know, I don't understand with her great powers, why didn't she just open a tear and go to Paris?
I think because she was always afraid that she was going to be pulled back by Songbird.
Perhaps.
And you got to remember, early on, she wasn't able to really control the tears.
Right.
She could open them, but she couldn't make them necessarily open where she wanted to go.
Got it.
Then, at the end of the game, she's like, the universe is all known to me. And was like, I can go wherever the fuck I want.
That, I could have just waited till then, but that peace, Booker.
So, she went to Paris.
She bonjour!
And she's walking down the Champs-Élysées. And everyone's bonjour, little French boys playing with their baguettes. They're like, bonjour.
Oh, play with their, that's bonjour. What the kids are calling it, playing with their baguettes.
Mademoiselle Elizabeth. Yeah, like, seriously, there's a kid, like, running.
On the street called Les
Rues. Seriously, he's, like, running around a circle with a big baguette. Uh-huh. He's like, bonjour, Elizabeth.
Look at my giant baguette. It is so big.
So she's walking in Paris, and everyone's, you know, it's like a fucking Disney movie. She's like, oh, hello.
Actually, and Anastasia was a Don Bluth movie where they went to Paris.
was mostly talking about Beauty and the Beast, where
that was it. Yep. Bonjour.
And everyone she walked, she was like, bonjour, babe. Bonjour.
That was probably the best opening sequence.
So anyway. Yes. So yeah, so it was like that sequence. That's why I said it was like fucking Disney. She's walking down the fucking street and everyone's like, oh, hello. And like literally gets to a point where it stops and like a bird lands on her finger and starts humming along the
melody. She's not a fucking princess.
This is what I'm saying. It's like fucking Disney, right? But then this weird thing happens. She sees a little girl off in the distance with a red balloon. Fucking red, guys. It's always a warning. It's never a happy place. It's always a warning. So she approaches the girl, and it turns out to be Sally. And then all the color in the world goes away, and it turns into, like, this post-apocalyptic thing. And she's chasing after Sally, but she can never catch her. And she ends up at a doorway that says Booker DeWitt. And flash, some shit happens. And all of a sudden, Elizabeth...
is in rapture?
Yeah.
Of course.
She wakes up where she was, you know, just had killed Comstock.
Right.
But she's on the ground, and she wakes up, and you hear Atlas talking about just fucking kill her. And you see two guys trying to pull Sally out of the vent, and this guy's just, like, playing Russian roulette with you, Elizabeth. And they start moving Comstock's body away, and Atlas basically says, just fucking shoot her in the head. We're not animals. And, you see off in the distance and you hear a Booker playing guitar telling her, tell him that you can get him back to Rapture. She's like, what are you talking about? I don't even know. And he's like, say it. Just tell him you can get him back to Rapture. So she's about to get a bullet in her head and she screams it. And Atlas is like, put the gun down. He's like, what do you mean? And he's like, just tell him you can get him back to Rapture. And so she says it again. And he's like, well, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but we're in a building that just got sunk out of Rapture. So we're not going to be able to do that. And she basically says, oh, no, I am Su Chong, this Chinese scientist in the city's assistant. And he was working on this amazing thing that would actually be able to float the city. If you give me the girl, I'll go get the thing and float the city back up and you can go back to Rapture. And so now you partake through Rapture as Elizabeth on this mission to save Sally. And it's basically because Elizabeth feels guilty for using Sally as bait to get Comstock out in the open where she could kill him, and left Sally behind in Rapture knowing all the things that were going to happen in Rapture and all the things that were going to happen to her. That's right,
because she can see behind all the doors.
She decided that she would go back to Rapture to save her. Well, here's a problem.
There's a problem.
Because, again, the Comstock that was in Rapture was there because it was a world in which Anna never existed.
Right.
Because Elizabeth actually died in Rapture.
Okay.
You get this flashback after she opens up this panel to see her dead body impaled with rebar through the chest.
Okay.
And she gets a flashback of her actually being taken the fuck out by Big Daddy. Now, see,
isn't there something that happens in Infinite where, you know, Booker would experience things that a version of him had experienced, and if you remember that for too long, you go fuck crazy?
And bleed?
Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, because I'm like, that doesn't seem fair that she would. Yeah,
because what happens is, because she's gone back to this realm, and she's brought back by the Lutesses, who tell her that it's a place that she doesn't belong and she cannot be, but she's going back anyway, that she now has created a singularity, and she no longer has those abilities, which is true. She no longer can see all of the doors and what's behind them, and past, present, and future. It's all gone away. As you progress through the story, you get flashes and some of her memory starts coming back, including some of her knowledge, but it basically is just Elizabeth running through Rapture based off of the knowledge that she had from all the things that she read and experienced before coming to Rapture.
Ooh.
So
essentially she became the Anna of that Rapture again and was fated to end up the same way that Anna
she's
did?
Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
But she is the Elizabeth now.
Right, okay.
And because the Anna DeWitt of Rapture is dead, you see that body before you progress on the story. For whatever reason, which the story keeps telling you over and over again, are reasons that you have of your own and the decision that you made on your own to come back, knowing that you were going to die, you were not going to get out of Rapture, you were never going back to Paris, is all in service to saving Sally, which kind of makes little sense.
because you really don't know this girl from Adam.
Ha! Get it? Joke?
But Elizabeth feels so guilty for what she's done and the life that she sentenced her to. She feels like she has to save her. And you're like, well, why don't you just, you know, go to a point where you and make a tear where you can grab the girl, but because she went back to Rapture, she can't make any more tears, so she can't do it. Okay, fine. There's the reason why.
All right. Here's your paradox.
So, everything must come to a conclusion.
Yes. And a good story begins where it ends.
It always begins always or ends does. Where it begins. So, as you progress, you are Elizabeth. Elizabeth, obviously, is not Booker DeWitt. She is not a powerhouse. So the game switches and now becomes about stealth. Where before, you needed to be a little bit crafty, lay some traps, but you could go in guns a-blazing in Infinite.
Yep, which I totally did.
Elizabeth is not strong. Elizabeth is not able to carry as much ammo as Booker DeWitt. So Elizabeth must divert people, use gases to knock them out, tranquilize people, and catch them unaware. So you have to land quietly in areas when you're using the sky rail so as to not alert people to where you are so you can sneak up behind them and knock them out. She has different plasmids that are available to her as opposed to vigors that were available in Columbia, including one that will allow you to see people through the walls. So very much like the stealth eagle vision in Assassins, you can see the outline of people through the walls.
Or the hearing ability from Last of Us.
Correct. If she maintains it for a long period of time, she basically ends up cloaking herself, which will allow you to get people to walk past you.
So that you can see behind them and hit them in the head?
Correct. And it's a very interesting stealth mechanic. It works really well. It just fits.
I feel like it makes it super, super easy, though, to clear out an area.
Well, it doesn't make it super easy because there are just so many more bodies that are there. Plus, you have Big Daddies that you have to worry about. And if a Big Daddy sees Elizabeth, it's just going to charge and kill her. And she cannot defend against a Big Daddy. So you cannot be found by one.
So they've made it like action-adventure, first-person, with elements of fleeing survival horror.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. So all that right. And when you think about where you are, being in Rapture, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it does.
So you continue on through the game. You find out that Su Chong was able to mimic technology of the Lutesses based off of memories that Comstock had. And so he was able to create a tear into Columbia. And he was working with Fink. So those whole missions that you played when you were in Infinite, where you were in Fink Industries, and you're like, how do you get all this technology? And this looks like something out of Rapture. Well, it was. He was working with Su Chong through these tears. And that's why you have Vigors and and plasmids.
And, I don't know, monsters that have human...
Su Chong was working desperately on creating drinkable plasmids. The ones that he had created.
AKA Vigors?
Correct. However, the one and his prototypes that he created killed and just fucked up so many people in Rapture that they told him to abandon it in Rapture. But he continued working on it with Fink, and that's why you were able to have Vigors in Columbia.
Well, what do you know?
So then you learn that there was also overlap with Daisy Fitzroy.
Right.
Which one of the things that I hated about Infinite was just how, like, a dick Daisy Fitzroy was when she took Fink's kid and was like, I'm going to kill Fink's kid because everything that he owns and touch, Fink, needs to be destroyed. And you're like, wow, that really doesn't fit. Like, you're the voice of the people and you're trying to start an uprising
and you're
going to kill a kid.
And you're shedding blood of innocence when you're really not even, you're not trying to do, yeah.
And Elizabeth...
There was a contradiction in how she delivered.
And Elizabeth ends up killing Daisy to keep her from killing the kid. Well, we learn that Daisy was actually put up to this by the Lutesses. And the Lutesses tell Daisy that there's a girl that's going to come. And she's going to come to Daisy as a woman. And she needs as a girl and needs to leave as a woman. And the only way to do that is through blood. And because you hear Daisy explaining that she appreciates the Lutesses giving that her all the insight and information that they have, allowing her movement to grow and do all this stuff. But that, you know, she has no intention of killing this kid because she doesn't want to spill innocent blood. And they're like, look, are you committed to your cause or are you just committed to, like, your personal beliefs? Because you need to do this in order for the cause really come to an ending for Comstock to die. So you got to step up to the plate.
Yep. You play your role. Either you're important to your role or you're important to the play.
Yep.
Like, it's either the play or your role, and you have to decide which one is more important. And she, obviously, if you've played the game...
Yeah.
She put the value in the play.
Yeah. You also learn that Su Chong and Fink were working together to not only create Songbird, but also...
the process of imprinting.
Exactly. Based off of what they did with Big Daddy's. So, yep, that connection is there. Su Chong is like, all right, so Fink has this...
Sample of hair.
You gotta get the sample. You get the sample, I'll open up the chair, you can come back, it'll be all good. So she finally gets the sample, which is basically just her hair, but Su Chong has no idea that Elizabeth is the girl that he needs. And heads back to Rapture. She gets the sample to Su Chong. Enter Ryan. Intercepts. And basically sends his guys to kill her. Elizabeth, if you're crafty, takes them all out. It can take a couple tries to get it right because these guys are using vigors so they can transport around the room and stuff. Gets
the sample to...
Gets away from Ryan's guys, gets to Atlas, and says that she's gonna bring the particle to him. Gets to the top of the building, starts to raise the building. Atlas, of course, being the dick that he is, shows up, knocks her out. Because he's looking for an ace in a hole. And she's like, look, I know that you're going to kill me because this is how this ends. I'm not stupid. And he's like, well, as soon as I get the ace in the hole, I will. You continue to go through. There's a doctor who ends up trying to use sodium pentothal, truth serum, to get Elizabeth to open up because... Atlas is just sure she knows what the ace in the hole is. She doesn't really, but through torture and having a needle driven through her eye into her skull.
I know, a lobotomy, which was very graphic, was not expecting them to take it there.
Yeah, needle right in your eyeball, being tapped in. You have to watch it being tapped in.
It's right at the front of your frontal lobe.
It is really fucked
and
up.
The tension that's built in that scene, I think,
It made me, like, I squirmed in my chair.
Yeah, it was really grounding. I was like, oh my God, like, ooh, I could feel every pulse of every time he tapped that little hammer.
Yep. Elizabeth's like, go ahead, fine, put me out of my fucking misery then.
You want me to forget everything that happened here? Go right ahead.
So Atlas is like, okay, well, since I can't do this to you, I'll just do it to Sally instead. So Elizabeth's like, no, I'll do whatever I need to do. Doctor comes back, ends up knocking her out. She's out for 2 weeks. When she finally comes through, the revolution has happened. Like, shit's all blown the fuck up. And Atlas is like, seriously, I need to know what the ace in the hole is. You need to give it to me. I need to have it right now. As the torture is happening, Elizabeth remembers that she knows the ace is in Su Chong's clinic. So he's like, great. Ryan's like
got it all rigged up
with torts that know our DNA of me and my guys, so we can't go in there and get it. She's like, yeah, I know that. I'll go get it. So she goes down to get it. She interacts with these two little sisters and a big daddy
who is injured or hurting in some capacity.
Yeah, he's injured, and as you go through that exercise, you see how imprinting happens. And the second time that they make mention of the mouse and the lion with the thorn in its paw. Basically, it's the little sisters helping the Big Daddy that allows the Big Daddy to imprint on the little sisters and the little sisters to care for the Big Daddy, and then that's how their relationship is formed. The same thing is what happened with Songbird.
And Elizabeth.
And you saw that through a flashback. So, again, circles get kind of created. The little missing holes are made and the loops are done. Elizabeth makes it to Su Chong's office with the little sisters and the Big Daddy. And the little sisters are trying to get Su Chong's attention. The Big Daddy's walking in. Su Chong, who has no temperament for children at all, knocks one of the little sisters back. At which point the Big Daddy like goes into a rage because you've hurt the little sister. Which, that's what they do. Kills Su Chong. And killing Su Chong knocks over a thing on the desk. You get to see the letter about the ace in the hole, which is encoded. You snag it, walk past the Big Daddy and little sisters.
Because he's not after you.
Nope, not at all. You make it back to Atlas. You give him the ace letter in the hole. About the ace in the hole. Atlas pegs you in the head with a wrench. You go down. You're not dead yet.
But
you start having some weird wobbly.
You're having that Harry Potter Dumbledore moment at the end of
Yeah, you're having that moment, and he wakes you up out of it. It's like, what the fuck is this shit? Because it's encoded. He's like, come on, you little whore, tell me what this is. Tell me what this is. And you're like, I'm not a whore. Fuck you and your mama. I ain't telling you shit. You hit me in the head with a wrench. But of course, that's just me superimposing what I would say. But Elizabeth has one more brief flit in the future where she's in front of a mirror and she's bleeding and she's on a plane. She's walking down the plane, and anybody that played original Bioshock realizes it's the plane that you're on that's going down that first leads you to Rapture.
Yep.
She's walking up and you see Jack actually get up from the first game and aim his gun at somebody on the plane, and a letter comes flying by, and you see "Would you kindly," which when you played the first game, you know that "Would you kindly."
Well, when you first play the game, not until you get to that turning point is it revealed to you that Jack has been brainwashed.
Yes,
and will has to do whatever is stated after "Would you." It's like a trigger.
Yep,
it's a hype. Hypnosis trigger.
Yep. Which when you
big play, reveal for Bioshock if you haven't played that.
Which when you play through Burial at Sea Piece 2, you learn that hypnotherapy was one of the things that they tried to use to help imprinting happen, and it failed. But it worked for Jack, who was created by Ryan and Su Chong.
Yep.
As being the ace in the hole. Which is why Atlas desperately needed to get his cherry-rigged ass back to Rapture. So, Elizabeth comes out of her little funk.
Just enough to drop that bomb of knowledge onto Atlas.
Atlas goes, thank you so much. Pegs you again in the head with the fucking wrench. And as you're going down, you hear him, all right, now let's get that genetically modified piece of shit on a plane and get him here, and then Rapture will be ours. Bum, bum, bum.
Yep. Oh, but don't forget the very touching ending as our friend Elizabeth is dying. You hear that song that happens in all movies when someone's in France and it's being hummed / said by our friend Sally, who is nuzzling and holding Elizabeth's hand as her head is bleeding and she dies. To the overlook of Rapture.
Yes, with La Vie en Rose, the song
do,
playing.
Do, 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 but
and,
more romantic than
Sally
that.
Sally singing it to her. Elizabeth has in her hand the head of the doll that Sally is holding. Sally picks up the head, puts it together, and as Elizabeth is dying, has one last vision of the future. And says, you know, I saw behind all the doors, all the things. And amazingly enough, behind one of the doors, I saw him. And the him that she saw was Jack. And what she saw was Jack saving the little sisters, ending all the violence. And of the sisters that he saved, one of them being Sally with the doll attached. So that's why she did it. To go back to ensure that everything ends in Rapture and that Jack is able to be successful and save the little girls. So, big chunks of questions that we all had about the Bioshock timelines and how and why Booker, Comstock, Elizabeth, those timelines came together or didn't come together, and how and why different technologies came across and seemed the same. I mean, I
think, answered.
I think,
and in DLC, guys.
I think the only thing that still was not addressed for me is who was Songbird. Because the thing about Big Daddies and Songbird is that they were a fusion of, you know, like, mechanical, and also had to have an element of, you know, human. Had to have brain.
Yep.
And I just want to know who, like, I feel like Songbird should have been somebody very important to Elizabeth.
And, you know, one of the things is, and I hope that at some point in time, for some reason,
maybe in some light novel maybe somewhere they'll address
somebody
it.
Somebody creates a graphic novel series where they address it and answer it.
Because I feel like it has to be somebody really important.
Well, I not to say that I disagree, you know, because you have so many different Comstocks and Booker DeWitts in some universes, it's not crazy to think that, you know, in a universe where they pulled an Anna DeWitt from Booker, why not take the Booker and the Anna so that she doesn't lose her pinky? If you take the Booker out of an alternate universe, you could...
theoretically, I guess...
fuck him up and make him imprint on his daughter.
Well...
that would make him instantly imprint on her and want to protect her from any and everything in the world that could possibly touch her and take him from her.
True. That's very true. You're right. But I guess we'll never actually
So you pull them both through the tear as opposed to trying to take one.
Right. All right.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Because I agree. Songbird really needs to be somebody important to Elizabeth Anna DeWitt. Because,
I mean, even in some of Su Chong's things, it's like, you know, a little sister could go and give some of her atom to a big daddy, but if the big daddy doesn't like her, he won't imprint on her and then he'll kill her.
Yep.
So there has to be something about the little sister to the big daddy. So there had to have been something in the Songbird to want to imprint on Elizabeth.
Correct.
There has to be a tie
there. And when you watch the video of when the imprinting happened, it was that Songbird had crashed into her tower. It was a part of some kind of big battle or fight or something when she was a child. And his breath tube became detached and he was just laying there dying. And Elizabeth, running up to him, reattached it, and he was able to breathe, and he opened his hand and allowed her to crawl into it, and that's the moment that he imprinted and covered his wing to try and protect her while he was recovering. So it's possible that it's somebody that's not remotely even attached to her, but I would really like to believe, and I just want somebody to explain to me how it works and how that happens, but I agree with you, it needs to be somebody that was close to Elizabeth that had a reason on
already. Because Bioshock 2 was essentially, you know, you being a big daddy in search of your little sister, because the bond and the imprinting is so keen for them that one cannot really exist without the other one.
Correct. A big daddy cannot exist without the atom of his little sister.
So, I mean, it's all really interesting, and I hope that eventually they release information about that.
Yes. So, tied up in a nice, neat little bow, I have to say, a really wonderful story told by Ken Levine and the team at Irrational Games. I'm really kind of... taken aback by just how well done this DLC was. I think there are a couple of packages that were just a little bit too neatly tied up for me, but, you know, there's still enough things that are out there that don't have answers that keep me guessing about the universe. You know, clearly no one has said the Lutesses are the same person. We all know that they are. That's why they're so in sync with each other. They're not brother and sister from different dimensions.
I really
dimensions.
Wish that they wouldn't talk like they were, because they're obviously, there was never a pair of them. It was always one of them.
You don't know that. They could be twins that, you know, the other one died in the womb. In every possibility realm.
I mean, that could be the case. But I know down in the core of my core that there was only ever one Lutess, one. And it was either a female or a male. And, like, this is just their way of being...
But what if you're wrong? What if they were always twins and one just always died? And so in one universe, the female lived and the boy died. And in the other one, the boy died and the female
lived. That would explain their strong bond to want to be together.
Yep.
But at the same time, I mean, I just feel like...
But what if they are twins?
But what if they're not twins?
But what if they are?
I mean, because if there were parallel universes where there was me as me and then me as a dude. Like, would I want to be, like, hang out with the dude me?
No, you'd want to bone the dude you.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is.
No, actually, I don't know. He'd have to be really, really hot.
And the Lutesses never want to bone each other. They just always want to be together.
They're getting intellectual boners off of how they speak to each other.
It's just because they're scientists. They're getting scientific boners.
Sexy science.
Science,
bitches. But that is a totally different podcast with it.
Yeah, but, you know, you have the hanging question about Songbird. You have the hanging questions about the Lutesses.
Yep.
You know, you have the hanging question about after the fall of Comstock. What the fuck happened?
What happens?
Columbia.
Right.
Okay, with Elizabeth gone, Songbird gone, Comstock gone.
Lady, the president's wife lady was gone for a while anyway, so.
You know, she had been.
The whole ruling the family lady of Comstock is gone.
Is gone. Like, so what happens to Columbia? You know, because there's some really weird fucking ideas about based off of the prophet's teachings. So, you know, what happens to Columbia?
Right.
Or doesn't. You know, and it raises other questions as well. Well, shit, what. You know, as far as Jack bringing the little sisters up from Rapture,
what happened to Rapture? What happened to the big guys? They all just start shutting down and dying because they don't have Adam anymore?
I don't know that we're done with Bioshock.
No, I don't think we are.
I think Ken Levine is done with Bioshock.
Probably.
And I don't think that I'm done with Bioshock.
Oh, I know.
I really enjoyed this DLC. I hope that there's another chapter for the story because there are some questions that I really have. I don't know if they'll be as good as this, but this DLC was really fucking phenomenal. So if you have not tried Burial at Sea and you finished Infinite, trust me, even knowing from what I've shared with you what the story is, you still want to experience it because the visuals and how you get there is so unique. You just have to do it.
Okay.
So that's my game stuff. Panda, your game stuff?
We don't have time for
that. Oh, yeah. We've got time.
No, we really don't.
We've got time.
We don't.
But we can make time.
We really don't. It's all right. I'll save it for next week.
I didn't mean to take up all the time, but Bioshock.
I know, dude. It's all right. And I appreciated you having all of it here for everyone to
enjoy. Seriously, Bioshock.
So we will just talk about my subject next week. I will go first next week.
Yeah, you go first next week.
So that I can get it off my
plate. Hey, can I make an anime recommendation?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've been watching anime too, because I like to do that. And one of the series that I've been watching, and I marathoned it the other day, because I had been skipping it
for a while.
Alright,
can you tell everybody the name?
Yeah, I was gonna get to it, I just wanted to kind of lead up to it. It's called Witchcraft Works.
Okay.
And the series, basically, it's just a 12-episode arc, and it's, a little bit role reversal. So you know how in some anime series you have a girl who gets a knight that protects her for whatever reason. A whole bunch of people are after her. And so a guy with power shows up out of no place and protects her and all that kind of stuff. Okay, well, that's not how witchcraft works. It's actually reversed. So there's this dude.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and the dude has kind of sort of imprisoned within him the most amazing white witch ever. That these two camps of witches, Tower Witches and Workshop Witches, basically the Tower Witches want to release out into the world so that this White Witch will destroy everything.
But White Witches are supposed to heal.
Yeah, no, not this one. Evermillion kind of has her own thoughts about things. And the Workshop Witches want to keep imprisoned inside this guy who has no idea that he has this White Witch in him. The leader of the Workshop Witches, Kazuda, has a daughter who's an amazing fire witch. And she has contracted with the guy to protect him.
Okay.
So all the other witches want to break the seals and let the white witch within him out.
Uh-huh.
But the fire witch, basically, who is like the princess of the school, the private school that they go to, and like all the girls love her and want to like do her. And she doesn't want anything to do with him because she is solely focused on her mission of protecting this guy who she's kind of in love with but never, like, says it. And he has a lot of feelings for her but doesn't think that he loves her, just that she's a really sweet person and he wants to be protected. But he has a little sister that has little sister issues. Oh, yeah, and she's a witch, too. Hilarity ensues. It's really adorable. I love the fact that it's the reverse of the knight. She constantly refers to the guy as being her princess.
Of course.
And he's like, I don't understand. Why does she keep saying that? I'm her princess and she's my knight. I'm a dude. She's a chick. And she also has, like, an amazing rack.
And
they often do.
But the action in it is really interesting. A lot of the familiars that the witches use, because they're girls in high school, are toys that they have. So, like, one of them has a teddy bear.
Uh-huh.
Familiar that grows to be, like, skyscraper size and WWE style wrestles.
Mm-hmm. Suplex!
One has a familiar Medusa who can make people stone, even though she doesn't have her hands free or her eyes free. And she has, like, six little witches that work for her. And they're basically, like, the gang from,
the gang from
the cartoons we were talking about earlier. It was Darkwing Duck versus DuckTales. Mm-hmm. The Beagle Boys. There it is.
Okay.
So they're
Beagle Boys.
Yeah, they have the intention of being like the baddest ass witches, and they always think that they're going to win their situation, but they're a bunch of bumbling fools, and they constantly get beat. And you know,
the Beagle Boys remind me of the mother and sons from the Goonies.
Yes. So you have that line through it. So it's really super saccharine. Like I said, it's 12 arc episodes. All 12 episodes are available on Crunchyroll right now. You can also catch it on Hulu Plus. I believe up to episode 9 is on Hulu Plus, but they may have episode 12 by the time you listen to this episode. Super, super cute. Really good action. Drawn really well. Some of the characters do that fading of the hair color. The gradient thing that
you like, Panda. That's so, really big this season.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely worth checking it out. Witchcraft Works.
Okay. Maybe I'll talk about that on next week's show.
You could do that. You should watch it.
I mean, you already kind of just did.
I just talked about, like, in the overarch what goes on. But
anyway.
I didn't talk about what happens and if the White Witch actually makes it out. And,
anyway,
like, if the world, like, blows up or whatever.
Maybe we should start wrapping it up.
Oh, well, if we're going to start wrapping it up, I think the first piece of wrapping it up is to start talking about
the question of the week. It's a video game question,
what?
And frankly, here it goes. Between fighters, what's your favorite? Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter?
Ooh, Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter.
Mortal Peep Fight.
Oh, Mortal Peep Fight.
Mortal Peep Fight is the shit, by the way. But that's your question of the week.
All right.
You can
Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter.
Which one's your favorite? On Facebook, you can leave your comment. You can even give us a reason there. You can put it on Twitter. Look and use the hashtag #EshQuestion. Give us your answers, short and sweet there. Ooh, excuse me. And you can also plop it down on our feed over at the VOG Network when our show airs there on this Tuesday.
On this Tuesday, because you can participate on VOG and interact with us, comment mm-hmm. on the post, let us know your answer, give us questions.
So there are three ways for you to get this answer to me. We got to get this question before this Saturday, before we record the show.
Yeah,
get your moment of fame, people.
Because we will announce your name and your answer. And
you'll be like, cool, for like 2 minutes.
I agree with that person, or I don't agree with that person.
It's like At Midnight, where you kind of sort of win a part
of the internet. But not live, because the show is taped. So make sure you answer the question, Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter.
What's your favorite?
We will share our favorites next week on the show, which you will find on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can also find our podcast, like we said earlier, on the VOG Network, as well as some other amazing shows on the VOGNetwork.com. And you can find our podcast in the iTunes store by searching for Eshcast, either through the desktop app or on the podcast application on your iOS device. You can find our show in the Microsoft Store, again, searching for Eshcast and subscribing. And we're on Stitcher. So pretty much we're on the interwebs. Any way you want to get us, you can get us. You can also find the articles and other thoughts that we have written up throughout the week on our home away from home, www.egmnow.com, because we are an EGM Now partner member. So that's where you'll find our content, written reviews, previews, and event coverage. It's all going to be over there. So you should be there too. Subscribe to the page and make sure that you get our new articles the moment we put them out, as well as our show going out every week, typically on Mondays. On Tuesdays, you can get a brand new episode of No Borders, No Race, held down by our homeboy KBD. For all the things indie and more, anime, music, TV, movies, video games, I mean,
he's all over it, guys. For a different view on things askew, make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race. On Wednesday, for fresh beats in your ear, if you need a little groove to get your booty moving, then make sure that you check out Geek Aggro, hosted by our homeboy Deuces Wild. Trap music, EDM, trance, house. You will hear it there first, I promise. It is phenomenal. And then on Thursday, keeping the nerd needs satiated and giving you a place to talk about it all. If you got issues,
he's got issues,
y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy holding down the Issues program, live call-in show. Get the number, share your issues, do it live. It's frippin' awesome. So with all that done, it's the time of show where I turn to my sister and I say, hey, Panda.
Yo.
What shit you digging this
sleep.
Week?
Sleep.
Sleep. It does a body good. That it?
Yeah, what just are you sleep? Digging?
I'll be honest with you. Chocolate.
That sounds pretty sweet to me.
And, you know, if you do it right, it leads to sleep. So as always, I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys. Bye.
Pax is coming. Pax is coming.